from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by William Orem with help from Charles Horowitz in physics. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. For a moment of science, I'm Don Glass.
In sports, Robert Carlsen is the on-course leader early in the first round of the U.S. Open Golf Championship. The Swede was 4-under par through 11 holes. Tiger Woods double bogeyed his first hole, but bounced back for 3 birdies on the front side and was 1-under at the turn. Former Georgia Tech, Alabama, and Kentucky football coach Bill Curry has been hired to fill that role with Georgia State's new football program. The 65-year-old Curry spent the last decade as a football commentator for ESPN. There's a lot of afternoon baseball on today's Major League schedule. Let's go to the scoreboard in the AL. Detroit defeated the Chicago White Sox 2-1. In the bottom of the fifth, Texas and Kansas City are knotted at 4 apiece. In the National League, in the top of the fifth, Atlanta leads the Cubs 2-0. In the top of the ninth, Pittsburgh leads Washington 7-5. Top of the eighth, the New York Mets lead the Arizona Diamondbacks 4-0. And in the top of the fifth, it's Milwaukee 7, Houston 3. Game 4 of the NBA Finals is set for tonight in Los Angeles. The Lakers trail the Boston Celtics 2-1 in the best-of-7 showdown for the title. And Indiana University officials are scheduled to go before the NCAA Infractions Committee tomorrow in Seattle over alleged rules violations by former basketball coach Calvin Sampson. They'll be trying to avoid penalties beyond the scholarship and recruiting restrictions the school imposed when the allegations came to light last year. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers of the M2 on Neal mixed-use project in downtown Champaign. On the web at ratioarchitects.com.
It's 242, 91 degrees in Urbana. The Mortgage Bankers Association says of all the homes in the country, nearly 2.5% are in foreclosure. Illinois' foreclosure rate is even higher, the 7th highest in the nation. Home foreclosures also appear to be on the rise in the Champaign-Urbana area. But as AM580's Jim Meadows reports, it may not have reached the crisis level yet.
Paulette Coleman is one of Champaign-Urbana's home foreclosure statistics. She's a single mother supporting 5 children and a grandchild on her pay as a community organizer for Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. A couple of years ago, she found a mortgage lender ready to help her fulfill a deep desire to own her own home.
The mortgage lenders had people at these open houses that promised that I could qualify for some federal benefits because I had a lot of kids, I could have a good mortgage that I could afford and still live. I wanted it so bad that I ended up getting a bad loan.
Coleman says her mortgage never required her to make a down payment, but she says that proved to be a disadvantage because she had no equity to draw from when expenses like an auto repair bill or Christmas presents for the children strained her finances. Soon she reached a point where the payments left her with nearly nothing for other bills. Coleman was still trying to renegotiate with the mortgage holder, Countrywide Financial, when the foreclosure papers were filed.
I wish I would have known the things that I know now when I got this house, but I didn't. You know, when you want something really bad, you have to be really careful because you will get nothing in the end.
Sheila Dodd tracks foreclosure filings in Champaign for the city's Neighborhood Services Department. While the total number of home foreclosures may be higher in nearby Danville and Decatur, where blue-collar economies have taken a hit, she says the number of foreclosures in Champaign is going up steadily.
They've almost doubled since October. We were averaging like 5 or 6 a month, and now we are doing 12.
A similar increase is reported by the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Foundation, which says the number of downstate Illinois residents calling them for advice on home foreclosures has nearly tripled this year. But while they're on the rise, it's not clear home foreclosures in the Champaign-Urbana area pose as big a problem as they do elsewhere. David Sino, with the University of Illinois College of Business, believes the total number of properties in foreclosure in Champaign County is still very low. He says it's stayed low because the U of I, agriculture, and local hospitals provide a stable employment base for the county. And Sinnoh says local housing prices never skyrocketed like they did in other states with high foreclosure levels.
Houses weren't doubling and tripling like they were in Nevada and Florida and California. So basically, we had something that I refer to as the affordability index. In other words, what percent of people in a county can go out and afford a home? And the bottom line is, it remains a very substantial percentage in Champaign County.
The Reverend Eugene Barnes says economic buffers like the U of I may not be enough for Champaign-Urbana. Barnes runs the Metanoia Centers in Champaign, which provides counseling to homeowners facing foreclosure. He cites figures from the Center for Responsible Lending, which identified nearly 1,400 subprime loans made in Champaign County in 2005 and 2006. The center projects that 21% of those will end in foreclosure.
And if the projection is correct in terms of maybe 21% of those foreclosing, we're going to look at a decrease in our tax base of $11 million. And I think that's going to have an effect, and I don't know where that buffer is going to come from.
Whatever the total impact of mortgage foreclosures on Champaign County, it makes little difference to Paulette Coleman. She says she's resigned to losing her house and believes her best hope now is to sell it quickly for enough money to settle her debt with Countrywide.
I think if I would have got a better loan, that I probably wouldn't be in this situation. But I am in this situation, and people have to really read everything very closely and even maybe get a second opinion before you get into a mortgage.
It's a regret that several more Champaign-Urbana residents may be facing before the year is out. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The neighborhoods of North Minneapolis have long been a bit rougher and poorer than the rest of the city. Now, with the mortgage foreclosure crisis, the troubles there have multiplied. Today, in some parts of the city, one in seven houses is abandoned. NPR's Jim Zeroli looks at how the foreclosure crisis is playing out in Minneapolis.
Nellie Campbell sweeps the twigs and grass off the walkway of her home on Aldrich Avenue. Campbell remembers when she knew almost all of her neighbors, and most of them owned the homes they lived in. These days, only a few do.
All the rest of the houses is sold, or somebody's renting them.
How many houses are vacant right now?
It's about eight.
Eight right here on the street?
On this block, yes. Never before. To me, it's like a ghost town.
What's happened here has happened all over North Minneapolis. In the space of a few years, longtime residents have fled, property values have tanked, and hundreds of homes have been abandoned. R.T. Ryback is Minneapolis's mayor.
Unfortunately, when America gets a cold, neighborhoods like North Minneapolis get pneumonia, and foreclosure hit much harder there than other parts of town.
The changes here have come with dizzying speed. For decades, North Minneapolis has been known as a tough, working-class neighborhood. It's got the highest concentrations of African Americans in a heavily white city. A few years ago, during the mortgage boom, North Minneapolis was discovered by investors. They liked the cozy, tree-lined streets close to downtown, and they liked the solid old bungalows that could be bought cheap and rented out. Many of the most stable, long-time residents drifted away.
Yeah, ready?
Joel Bregeman tosses a tattered soccer ball across his lawn and watches his dog, Cooper, run after it.
Look at it.
Bregeman's yard on Dupont Avenue North is surrounded by a wooden fence. He built it because he wanted more privacy. Bregeman says the newcomers in the neighborhood have tended to be a rougher crowd than those they displaced.
Blatant drug dealing, residents who spent their entire day out on the front step of the house drinking from 8 in the morning till 2 o'clock in the morning and would have their car parked in the street in front of the house with music blaring to the point where I wasn't able to ever even enjoy my own screen porch because the music was so loud at the house behind me, you couldn't hear yourself think.
The area's troubles have been greatly aggravated by mortgage fraud, says Assistant U.S. Attorney Joe Dixon.
There are always victims in fraud cases, but the kinds of cases that we've been prosecuting in the last year have had a dramatic impact on the communities in which these properties are located.
The most notorious case involved a firm called TJ Waconia. U.S. officials say the company sold properties at inflated prices using fraudulent appraisals. The founders later pleaded guilty to mail fraud, and 141 North Minneapolis houses once owned by the firm now sit empty. The fraud helped drive house prices to artificially high levels, and when the subprime market collapsed, North Minneapolis was left with hundreds of foreclosed properties. These houses have become magnets for crime. Today, a Minneapolis police sergeant is sealing the doors of one house with plywood. The overgrown lawn is choked with dandelions, and a yellow foreclosure notice is stuck to a window. This house was taken over by gangs who used it to sell drugs. Crime prevention specialist Tim Hammett says that if houses like these aren't sealed up quickly, vandals strip them bare.
I came home from lunch one day, and I saw a woman who was blatantly just tearing siding, aluminum siding, off the house. I walk up to her and say, "What the heck do you think you're doing?" And she says, "Nobody's living here. Who cares?"
The vandalism can have dangerous consequences. Three times this year, houses exploded and burned because thieves stole the copper piping without shutting off the gas. The city is buying some of the vacant homes from the banks that own them. The hope is that by reclaiming and renovating these properties, they can lure back stable families. Again, Mayor Ryback.
These neighborhoods, which have very good housing stock, can attract good, solid homeowners. The problem is that we have been dealing on such a large scale because we have so many foreclosures and so many of these properties tied up with predatory lenders.
But the subprime crisis has sent prices tumbling back down again, and a new generation of investors is buying up a lot of foreclosed properties. City officials worry that a lot of these will end up as inexpensive rentals, and that's led to a new struggle over North Minneapolis's future. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
8 minutes before 3 o'clock. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Honeybees are dying, and sometimes entire hives are dying. Scientists haven't been able to figure out exactly why this is happening. Some people are trying to help, and one of the ways they're helping is by becoming beekeepers. Rebecca Williams reports there are some beekeepers raising bees in big cities.
Some people call them guerrilla beekeepers. They like to keep their hive locations a secret. That's so the neighbors won't get worried about 60,000 bees living next door. There are white beehive boxes on rooftops in Paris, Chicago, Manhattan. And there are beehives tucked into open lots in the middle of downtown Detroit. Rich Wieske has been raising bees here for 8 years.
I mean, you think of cities as buildings, but Detroit's a little different because there's a lot of homes that have been bulldozed, tore down. So there's a lot of open fields. Great for bees.
Bees have a lot to eat in the city. They love the pollen and nectar from backyard gardens. Rich Wieske's just gotten a shipment of bees from California. Today, he's installing new worker bees and queens into his hives in the corner of an empty lot. He's one of the people trying to replace the bees that are mysteriously dying. This shipment of bees comes packed in wooden boxes, sort of like big shoe boxes, and there are about 9,000 bees to a box.
They'll move fast, but be warned, okay?
Wieske gives the box a big shake. No kidding, he's shaking the box of 9,000 bees. They pour into the hive in a bright orange stream. The bees buzz by our heads and land in my hair and fly up my sleeves. But Rich Wieske promises the honeybees are not out to get us. They'd actually rather not sting, because then they die. Wieske has a hive he suspects is a little worked up, so he gets out the smoker. It looks like the love child of a watering can and a miniature accordion. It sends out little puffs of white smoke.
I use lavender, sage, any dried herbs. Also, those cedar chips that you find in the bottom of a gerbil cage.
He waves the smoker around the hive before he lifts the cover off. He says the puffs of smoke calm the bees down. It covers up the alarm pheromone bees give off, which apparently smells like bananas if you're unlucky enough to smell it. Wieske got into beekeeping with 2 hives, and now he's got more than 100.
You got to watch beekeepers. A lot of them become missionaries. You can tell a beekeeper because they love talking about bees, and they'll talk to anybody about bees and try and get them to become beekeepers.
Wieske has a lot of apprentices. The next stop on our bee tour is a working farm, right in the middle of downtown Detroit. Rich Wieske is helping his understudies install new bees in the hives. He's giving Adam Verville the same lesson he gave me earlier.
And this is the sort of scary part.
Verville says a lot of his friends keep bees in the city.
People don't have much money, and so, like, really, these projects supplement our incomes, essentially, by giving us food and honey.
There is a lot of honey in beekeeping. Not a whole lot of money, though. But the beekeepers say they feel like they're part of something bigger. Stephen Buckman is a bee expert.